As behind the news, and as usual, we encourage you to be very active listeners. If you feel so strongly about any of the stories or the issues we are treating, you can send us your text and we'll get it heard. But as usual, we encourage you to have a language that is so clean. We move on to our first story. Every year, the people of Fantia Kwaetsoa and Kwaibibrim in the eastern region, being in the forest zone, experience a lot of rains. But for this year, the people have had more rains than expected. There are floods everywhere. Farmlands have been submerged. Farmers are marooned. Hamlets and villages have been swept away. And some people have lost their lives. Much as the floods are attributed to natural causes, some observers have attributed the situation to illegal mining in the area. The banks of River Brim, rich in natural resources, have been degraded by the activities of the Galamsey operators. The President, His Excellency John Atta Mills, has been to Fantia Kwaetsoa and Kwaibibrim to find out the extent of damage caused by the floods. But beyond the President's visits and measures put in place to mitigate the suffering of the victims of the floods, there is a need to check illegal mining in the Achim area. The question being asked is, why should the nation allow Galamsey operators to have their own ways to the detriment of the development of the ordinary people? Mike Hammer is the Minister of Lands and Forestry. We shall be getting to him soon. But before then, we've had our correspondent, Seth Eya, joining the President's entourage to the flood areas today. He's joined us on the line. Hello, Seth.
Hello, Kesley. Good evening.
Good evening. You have seen the situation firsthand. Can you give us a vivid picture of what you saw?
Well, what I can say is that it's a desperate situation facing some people in the eastern region, basically. You can imagine, you know, being able to put up a whole house, and in just a few hours of rainfall, the whole house will be submerged underwater. And unfortunately for them, the water is also not receding, so that they will go back and try as much as possible to salvage one or two things. Every place that we visited, Kingsley, the situation is so bad. All the communities, you know, have been flooded, houses submerged, and the situation is very terrible. Seriously, terrible, Kingsley.
Yeah, you talk about it being terrible. How many towns did you visit today?
We visited a number of towns. We went to Etua, where five people, you know, were reported dead, and two have been buried. Three are yet to be buried. Then we also went to Adon Prono. From there, there's a bridge, you know, that link, that Adon Prono and Kedi. Unfortunately, the bridge has been submerged totally. You can't see any remnants of the concrete bridge, and then some other houses have also been submerged. And so the town, the road or the link between Adon Prono and Kedi has been cut off. So the only means of from moving from one end to the other is by canoe. And so that is the situation at that place. Actually, we went to the area called Jamaica and a number of other communities, and the situation is so bad. The report we had was that there are some people who are still, you know, who have been cut off, and they just don't want to come to safer ground just because they want to salvage, you know, some property they've been able to acquire in their lifetime. But then the President accused them, you know, to come to safer ground so that they can be protected first. After all, life is very important. Then the government assured them that they will ensure that when they come, their belongings, you know, will be protected from thieves. And from there, we went to another town, also there. In fact, I don't know how to describe it, but the people are really suffering.
Seth, if I'm following up on what you just said, people wanting to salvage their property, in this case, the whole area is submerged. How are they able to detect that they still have property in there?
Yes, for those who are, you know, are closer to the bigger communities, I'm sure they were able to salvage one or two things. But those on the other side of the Brim River, you know, they normally walk, you know, long distance before coming to the main towns. They are the people who have been cut off, and they don't want to come out. Those others have come, and the others are also not, you know, have decided not to come. Only that the president appealed to them and assured them. So by, I'm sure by tomorrow, more and more outboard motors as well as canoes will be made available, so that when they get to them, they will be able to, you know, convey them to safer grounds, and then their belongings protected. You know, most of the people are farmers, and so if you lose your farm, and you are going to lose your property because of somebody's negligence, it's really painful. And so the people don't want to lose everything at a go, just like that.
Good. Even as you spoke to them, what were their main concerns now? The immediate things they want provided?
Yes, the government delegation, you know, was concerned with the welfare of the people, you know, those who have been affected. And so everything is being done. You know, medicines are being given to them. Places, you know, have been found in such situations. Normally, it's classrooms and church buildings that serve as solace for such people. And everything is being done. They are normally concerned, you know, with their belongings, their inability to go to their farm because of what has happened to them. And so the people are eager to get back, you know, to what they normally do best in their daily lives.
Yeah. How easy was it for you, that is, the presidential delegation and the reporters and the other members of the entourage, to move around these places?
We got to the banks most of the time of the area that have been flooded. You know, you go to the community, you can't move beyond the community due to the rapid nature of the flood. And so you get to the bank, you stand there, you look at people's buildings and other, you know, facilities being submerged. There's nothing you can do than to stay behind, look at them. And also those that have been able to, you know, are able to bring to safer grounds, you go there and interact with them. They are normally they are being kept in hospitals, they are being kept in churches as well as, you know, church buildings. So that is the only place you could and interact with the people. Others have also been able to put up with relatives. And so when we arrive, they come out in their numbers and they point to you the building there, you know, or the building that has been submerged. Others, some of the buildings you can see them, others you can't see them. So they'll be pointing, you know, to those properties to you. And you know that, yes, that was where, you know, that serves as their abode for a very long time.
Yeah.
So that was how we were able to get closer to the people, also to the banks of the area that have, you know, gotten flooded.
Seth, naturally we expect NADMO to be on the ground. How exactly have they deployed to assist the people?
Yes, interestingly, we have NADMO officials on the ground together with 48 engineers regiment. You know, normally they are good when it comes to the issue of disasters. And so they are on the ground, you know, with the help of canoes and outboard motors, they are able to move from one end of the flooded area to the other, you know, trying as much as possible to salvage some items and save the people, you know, from drowning. We also told that those that died, you know, were just trying to swim, you know, being courageous, you know, to swim. And unfortunately for them, they got drowned. And so the rescue team, you know, they are doing a very good job on the ground. They are there, apart from, you know, carrying out their rescue mission, they are also talking to the people to stay away from the dangerous areas and ensure that they are always kept away and safe wherever they find themselves. And so they have a number of NADMO and 48 engineers, you know, on the ground helping with the situation.
I want to thank you very much for giving us this update on the issues as it happens, as Achimwepuakwa, part of it being submerged. Thank you so much. We'll still be taking more as you get back to Accra. We are still trying to establish contact with the Minister of Lands and Forestry on Behind the News, Mike Hammer. As we try to get to him, we'll pick this quick story on efforts still being made on this flood situation. Jennifer?
Yes, President John Evans Atta Mills has directed the buffer store company to release 2,000 bags of rice and 2,000 bags of maize to be given to the flood victims. The Ministry of Local Government and Rural Development should also make available a number of outboard motors to NADMO and members of 48 engineers for rescue exercises. This is part of efforts by government to relieve the flood victims. A labour migration scheme has been developed to reverse the trend of irregular migration from Ghana to Europe. The Minister of Employment and Social Welfare, Inokhtay Mensa, said the scheme will create a legal entry and exit system for migrants and also protect employers and employees. The minister was speaking in Accra at the opening of a conference on labour migration management. Here is a report by Rosalind Kanyaglu.
Ghana faces a severe brain drain of professional workers, leaving human resource gaps in areas such as the health sector. The changes in migration trends over the years have necessitated a strategic approach to migration management. The conference will facilitate a coherent approach to the issue in Ghana, Nigeria, Senegal and Libya by assessing their policies and practices. The Employment and Social Welfare Minister, Inokhtay Mensah, said government remains committed to promoting decent work and enhancing social protection of citizens. He said more benefits could be derived from a successful labour migration scheme with EU countries. He urged participants to draw lessons from existing secular migration programs to serve as the basis for the development and implementation of future migration programs. The Senior Regional Advisor of International Organization for Migration, IOM Sub-Saharan Africa, Charles Quinin, intimated that migration has come to stay and as such, government and non-governmental actors must recognize it as an integral part of the global economy. He noted that one major challenge is the formulation and implementation of humane and equitable labor migration policies. He, however, stated that IOM is well positioned to offer assistance to support the effort of countries in the sub-region. In an address, the Chief of Missions, IOM Ghana, Diane Epstein, said secular migration schemes come with development opportunities for both sending and receiving countries which must be harnessed. This informs why IOM Ghana is collaborating with the Netherlands and Italian missions to implement projects that will enable Ghanaian migrants to undertake temporary returns. Ms. Epstein announced that 20 Ghanaian migrant workers will be taken to Italy to work in the farming sector for 3 months.
That was Rosalind Ganyaglu's report. And now back to you, Kingsley.
Yes, thank you, Jennifer. We are still trying to make contact with the minister and also establish contact with Mr. Samuel Ofosu-Mpofu on the issue of the buffer stock and as to how they are going to assist the people who have been affected with by the floods to do it. But we'll take a short break on Behind the News. When we come back, there are more stories here on the issue of the population, land use, and the attendant problems.
Behind the News. Behind the News.
Behind the News on Radio Ghana, we've managed to establish contact this time around with Mr. Samuel Ofosu-Mpofu, Minister for Local Government and Rural Development. He's also been touring and looking at what is happening. Earlier, we heard that there is the directive that we use our buffer stock to assist the people in need. Good evening, sir. You are welcome to Behind the News.
Good evening.
Can you please tell us exactly how you are going to use this buffer stock for the people, where it is, and whether it's even adequate for their needs?
Well, the Buffer Stock Management Company Limited normally buys foodstuffs from farmers and keep them and then release them when we are either facing famine or the disaster of this kind of magnitude. And that is exactly what is being done now. So this morning, Section the President issued an instruction, and then the Chief Executive Officer of the Buffer Stock Management Company indicated that they have two main warehouses, one in Rahafo and one in Ashanti region, and that they were going to cut the food items, i.e. the rice and the maize from Kumasi to Nadmo for onward distribution to the affected victims. As I speak with you now, the trucks are being loaded, and we believe that by tomorrow morning, some should reach the victims in the eastern region.
Yeah, we have a situation where some of them would not like to move. It's natural. They want to salvage some of their property. What are you doing to assist such ones to at least evacuate in the interim, and then you try to assist them later?
That is what the His Excellency the President said when we went to Oda area. That is where the water has inundated a large, you know, tract of a residential area, and some of the houses have been submerged. But as you indicated, we still spotted some young men somewhere on top of trees, somewhere, you know, perching at some strategic positions, ostensibly to ensure that their, you know, properties are protected. But they've been assured, because a number of policemen, military men, not more officials and other personnel have been deployed. And so the assurance is that everything possible is being done to ensure that people do not take advantage of the situation and loot. As a result of that, we realize that the number of outboard motors and boats there are inadequate. That's why the president directed, and as I speak with you now, 10 outboard motors have been presented to NAPMO, and by tomorrow morning, or at least by early tomorrow morning, we expect that those output motors will be sent to the area there, and that they will arrange and get some boots, hire some boots which they will fix the output motor to it, and then use it for the evacuation of people and not transportation of food and food items to those who have been locked up somewhere.
Yeah. So for some people, looking at the situation, you have been on the ground. Is it to an extent that we can declare state of emergency for the area?
Well, I think it's a very, very serious situation. But, you know, when there are flooding like this, sometimes it takes about 2-3 days and you see the water receding. In fact, in the Fantiakwa area, for example, Soso and Osino and others, when you get there today, the water has completely receded, so you wouldn't see the reality of the situation. But Oda, the water, you know, from the flooding Kebbi Kwabibrim area is moving downstream to Oda. So in most of the areas that have been inundated were inundated overnight, and the water seems to be rising. But the anticipation is that in about 2 or 3 days, it is expected that the water will recede, and so declaring a state of emergency now, I don't think will be the solution. What we need to do is just mobilize both human and material resources to support those who have been affected, so that they can be rescued. As far as destruction of property is concerned, I think that we will count into millions of Ghana cities, because the houses that are inundated are very, very, very huge, beautiful houses. And when you look at the houses and the quality of houses, you would by all means come to the realization that the content of those houses would also be very expensive items. So we will be, people will be losing precious property and belongings. But the president has assured that he's not only going to look at temporary measures like providing them with temporary relief, food items and matters. But it's also going to look at how to address the challenges of those who have lost very valuable things and then see how best to assist them. For instance, when we went to Atiwa, we went and met about five families who have all lost their relations, and the president has directed that those who have not been buried, government will assist them in conducting the funeral, and those who have even buried their loved ones will be supported financially. So I think that the government wants to take a holistic view of the situation and to see how best to address all the challenges that comes with it.
You've mentioned the efforts of government, but are you looking at a situation where perhaps others who are also in a situation to assist can quickly come on board to perhaps help in resettling these ones and assisting them in other ways possible?
Well, I think in situations like this, you have other agencies, the UNHCR, you have the Red Cross, and other relief agencies, the Catholic Relief Agency, and others, ADRA and all those things. So I just want to use this medium to appeal to them that our brothers and sisters and friends in these five districts have suffered a great deal, and for that matter, any assistance that will come from these relief agencies will be appreciated. We also call on our development partners who have always been very supportive of us when we find ourselves in such difficult situation, who come to the aid of government, team up NADMO, and the various municipal and these assemblies to address the challenges that have come up with this flooding situation.
We want to thank you very much, Mr. Samuel Fusampofu, for responding to our call this evening. And we want to really send our condolences to families that have lost relations in the floods too. Behind the news on Radio Ghana, two quick tests in. The swift response by President Mills to the flooded areas to acquaint himself with the extent of damage caused by the flood is commendable and shows that President Mills is really a father for. We didn't have a name though. Please remember to add your name and location. President Mills, you are really a father for. May the good Lord guide those who are affected, from Aziz Donla. And on a story that will be coming later, homosexuality is inhuman and must be condemned, from Akpa Welembele. And I express my sincere condolences to the families of those who lost their relatives. That is coming from Sham in Yindi. And Ilyasu in Tamale is posing the question, Tinsley, what measures have the government put in place to help those affected by the floods? Well, Ilyasu, you might have heard what the Minister for Local Government and Rural Development told us. There are still bigger concerns that we will be looking at when we manage to establish contact with Mike Hammer, the Minister for Lands and Natural Resources, but for now we are not able to establish contact with him. We are taking a quick break. When we come back, more for you here. Behind the news on Radio Ghana, I want to move on to our next one in relation to the population, our land use patterns, and the problems. As the world approaches 7 billion people, the question is still being asked as to whether there is overpopulation. In the case of Ghana, some have expressed concern about the preliminary statistics from the Census Secretariat after the 2010 population and housing census. To some people, however, Ghana's 24 million plus population is so small as compared to the land area and available resources. This group questions why there should even be talk about family planning and population control when land is still available. For population experts, however, this is a simplistic way of looking at family planning. So what are the real issues for family planning? Is it just about curbing population growth? Well, Dr. Ebu Jehuapia is the country director of IPAS Ghana, an organization that believes in the right of women to decide on their reproductive health issues. And he's joined us on the line. Doctor, welcome to the program this evening.
Thank you, Kingsley. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Greetings to your listeners.
Yes. We are asking that question. Is family planning only about reducing numbers?
In the 50s, when family planning was introduced in the country, we talked about population control. That was reducing numbers. We've learned over the years that it's beyond reducing numbers. You're talking about the health of the newly born baby, and the five children, and also the health of the mother. Apparently, we're talking about the health of the family. So we are talking about, yes, population control, and also talking about the health of the mother and the children and the health of the family. Actually, family planning now is linked up to development of every country. So there's no country that has developed, that has not addressed its family planning issues or maybe population control issues.
Yeah. When you raise it like this, linking it up with development of every country, can we say that then perhaps for developing countries that have not taken it seriously, it means they have not also looked at their population issues seriously, that is family planning then?
Yes, we see the rate of our growth. The fertility rate in Ghana right now is about 4.2%. And the way Ghana, for instance, I will talk about Ghana and later link it up to some other African countries who have taken initiative. Ghana's population is 24. But the rate we are going, the next 20, 30 years, Ghana's population will double. And if we do not develop our infrastructure to meet the challenges in the population growth, then we're going to be, it's going to be a big problem for our country and Africa. It's important. Am I still on air?
Yes, you are still on air.
Okay, right. It's important that we address this family planning issue if we really need to develop. As I said initially, there's no country that has developed without looking at this population growth. Currently, the contraceptive prevalence rate for Ghana is about 17%. It has dropped from 19% to 17%. Most countries, we have contraceptive prevalence rate that people who need to use modern methods of contraception, in country, it's only 17%. Only 70% of women are using contraceptives. In countries that are developed, we have up to 80 to 95% of the women who need modern methods using that. I want to break it down a little bit for us to understand what I'm talking about. Ghana has been a trailblazer in signing all the beautiful conventions and the treaties that have signed to control population. But we keep on explaining our failures. Sadly to say that countries that also learned from Ghana, our protocols, our systems, are doing better now than Ghana. I would mention a country like Mali. Nobody thought during our lifetime they were able to increase their CPR, that's a contraceptive prevalence rate, to the level they've reached. They've taken bold initiatives because they know, and it's been demonstrated, that if you implement family planning method the way it should be, you'll be able to help accelerate your development. The socio-economic goal that you have set, or the world has set for us, and that we have accepted and endorsed, that the Millennium Development Goals 1 to 8. Family planning is linked to all of them, from Millennium Development Goal 1 to 8. So we need to really sit up as Ghanaians and look at the areas that we have failed and try to address such issues. That is why it is important that, of course, we say that Ghana, we are only 24 million, so that is nothing compared to the 7 billion that is anticipated by the end of next month. But we need to plan properly, so that we will save the lives of our women, children, family, and the whole nation.
You've mentioned the area that we have failed. Can you point to one or two areas that we might not be doing so well and we need some increase in effort?
Yes, I've just mentioned the the need to use modern contraceptive method. Women who need contraceptive method and are not using, that has dropped from, the rate has dropped from 19 to 17. This is an area that we need to address. We have a system in place that called a national health insurance, for instance. Services on family planning at the national health insurance are covered. But the contraceptives or the products that the women need to use are not covered. So women will have to buy that, you know, to be able to, you know, implement their family planning programs. We are saying that it's been even calculated, apart from the our mothers being, you know, strong and saving, preventing unnecessary maternal deaths. We also make savings if Ghana is invest in family planning. A study has shown that if we invest, for instance, if you invest now between $6 to $8 million in family planning commodities, that people who need family planning method will get family planning method. In 2 years, Ghana would have saved $11 million. You understand? Even the simple mathematics tells us that it is so, you know, important to put in money so that women who need family planning will be able to space their children. If you space your children, you will be saving on the, you know, on pregnancies. Currently, one woman who is pregnant, the government is spending about 115 cedis on one such person. If you prevent some of these pregnancies, would have been saving such monies. In Ghana, it is estimated we're going to have about 700,000 pregnancies in a year. So if you calculate, if you do the calculation, and as the study has been shown, that you will be saving a lot of money, that even without talking about the unnecessary deaths to our mothers, you know, the deaths to our children, the deaths on the 5 neonatals, and the deaths in families, you know, you'll be saving money for the nation. So it makes a lot of sense. And finally, let me add that countries have realized that. Nigeria currently, in their budget last year, have a budget line for family planning in their national budget. Uganda has a budget line. Actually, the parliamentarians in Uganda refuse to accept the budget of the nation because there was no family planning line there. You know, Ethiopia has adopted a method that is working. Niger has adopted that is working. What is happening to Ghana? Ghana used to be leading all these countries in this effort. And so if we are going there, we need to sit back and find out that do we always have to wait for donors to put in money before we're able to do activities that we plan to do for ourselves.
Dr. Kewapia, you are raising a lot of questions and talking about nations that have been successful in managing it. Sometimes we compare to some developed nations, and now
Right. They
are rather trying to encourage population growth. Some are afraid we might get there and then start experiencing the challenges they are having.
If you learn from mistakes from others, you tend to plan yours better. Of course, if you do it to extreme, they will have the problems of the Sweden or the France and all that. But, you know, they have reached that stage of development that we are yearning to reach. You get what I'm saying? It is, you know, it is like the chicken and the egg, which one comes first. At this stage of our development, if we do not address population boom. Let me tell you, Kensley, somebody raised an important issue saying that the population of Ghana is just like the population of London. But look at the rate of growth of London now and compare to our fertility rate. As I said from the beginning, that if we do not control our population, you know, we're going to have, you know, the next 20 to 30 years, twice this number in this country. Look at our infrastructure development. In those countries that you want to talk about, look at their infrastructure development and look at ours now. How many schools do we have now for our children? What about a hospital? What about all infrastructure? I mean, mention anything that you want to talk about and see if it matches our population growth. Development of a country or development infrastructure should go in tandem with the population growth. So if one is growing and the development is stagnating, then means there's something that we need to, you know, to address. And the easiest and the most cost-effective way of matching that is to address the issue of family planning.
Do you think there is some understanding on the issues you are raising here? You have worked on the ground with people around the country.
Yes, I think everybody recognizes that issue. Of course, there are some people who are still in their old thinking that more children means that more hands to do more work. But is it true now? look at how many, you know, of our university graduates that do not have jobs because they are just not existent. Because our development has not moved to, you know, in tandem with our population. So people understand, but we need somebody to take a bold initiative that, yes, this is the way Ghana should go. This is the way others have done and they have developed. Why can't we go the same direction? You know, so that, I mean, we can limit the number of children a woman would have, for instance. Because when you have limited that number, the woman can now be strong to be more productive. The children will be healthier. And the family will be healthier. You would have saved enough money for the family and for the nation. But if it was not those days that when a woman had 10 children, she was rewarded for, you know, having the 10th child. What happened to the life of such people, or the children and or the mother? So we need to address issues as we develop. And family planning control has been one of the issues that, you know, globally it has been accepted. That has helped a lot of nations.
Okay.
Other countries that started with us, you know, we talk about Malaysia. Sometimes it's painful to mention those countries because we started the same way. Look at where they've reached and look at what they did before they reached there. It's all about population control and also thinking about lives of our children and mothers and families.
Dr. Ebuji Huapi, I want to thank you very much for sharing your perspectives on the issue with us.
Thank you.
As the country director of IPAS Ghana. But we also have now joining us on the line Dr. Stephen Kwanchi, the executive director of the National Population Council. Dr. Kwanchi, you are welcome to Behind the News.
Thank you very much.
Well, how will you respond to that school of thought that says family planning is not important because we are not overpopulated?
Thank you very much for having me, and good evening to your listeners. When I hear some of these statements, I become very sad because the issues have not been analyzed the way they should. You see, people think about just the numbers that we have, and I don't think it is so just the numbers that we are interested in. I just heard Dr. Jehu appear talking about what we have done and what we have done. I mean, the bold steps that we have been taking. And I agree with him perfectly. Those who are talking about that the fact that we are not many, they didn't actually sat down to understand the issues that we are talking about. And they haven't done the analysis that need to be done. And that is why they are talking the way they are talking, just like Africans prove. We love having many children, and therefore we should do things the way our forefathers, foremothers did it. And I don't think that is the way to go. It is really sad put on the way you are talking about.
Yeah. Have we not moved from that pronatalist thing where people need to get 10 children? Now we have been told we are at around 4.2. That is, if we are talking about a 0.2 person, if the person exists.
You see, things are changing, and I agree that we have changed also. But I don't think the change that we have experienced is what is expected. You see, previously people were having 10 children. What was the level of education? We have gone so far, and people have risen to positions with very, very high level of education. If we are still at this stage saying that 4 is okay, and we haven't expanded our economy to such an extent that it can take care of the numbers that we are producing, we need to sit down and rethink. And I don't think pronatalism has helped any country anywhere in the world. And we are not just talking about how many people we are. I keep on telling people that it is the rate at which we are growing. And Dr. Jehuapia rightly pointed out that if we to leave things the way they are now, within the next 29 years, I mean, we have another 24.2 million people, if not more, added to the numbers that. Then we ask ourselves, are we able to expand our economy the at which we are likely to expand our population?
Yeah.
That means that we have more mouths to feed, more schools to build, and as you are taking schools out of trees, the president is determined to do, if you take one school out of three, you create more. About two more under trees. So where are we going from there? And that is where whatever effort we are putting in, we have to back it up by population management through family planning, which is related to all the key indicators that we are trying to attain. That is the NDVs. So I don't agree with people who talked that and therefore we should continue business as usual. It's fact.
Yeah. Naturally, you have raised the issue of population and resource equation. A link is also being drawn between population pressure, land use, and then even the problem at Kwaibi Brain presently. Are we able to establish that link quickly?
For that place, and my condolences go to the families that have lost their loved ones and the properties that they have also lost. This is something that occasionally occurs, but I think the proper planning and looking at our population and changing our attitudes will be able to forestall and maybe save lives and property. Yes, there is a rapid population growth and the environment, land use and all that. Because as you grow more, if you are not able to expand your technology, what it will mean is that you still depend on the land area that you have access to in terms of farming. And if you are growing numbers, that means that the land that hitherto you had to yourself to be subdivided among your siblings. And as you keep on dividing and dividing, to a stage where you can only save your life by advanced technology, which at this stage we haven't actually been able to go there. So it means that if you get to a point where all of you cannot be on the same piece of land, people must find their means to survive. And all kinds of practices come in. We are talking about problems of Galamsey, where even rivers are polluted and trenches are dug everywhere and river course are diverted. And so it gets to a point where with some small rains coming in, I mean, the water courses are already diverted, and therefore, where there were banks and embankments that could maybe stop the rivers from overflowing their banks rapidly, have all been removed through Galamsey activity. So what happens? Small rains, the river bed is filtered already, so it overflows its bank, and then takes the communities. I mean, we haven't had this situation in the Eastern region for a very long time. You understand me? And that is the area we have been talking about, Galamsey, greatest polluting waters, here and there, with some of them being caved and then buried alive and all kinds of things. So two things, rapid population growth, which brings so much pressure, and people must find a way to survive. So attitudes that are unheard of have been put up, and that is continuously destroying the environment. And I believe that it is as a result of some of these things that we are hearing and seeing what is going on in the Eastern region.
Dr. Stephen Kwanchi, we want to thank you very much, but we'll still be expanding later on this population pressure and then land use patterns as we build up towards the 7 billion population for the world. Thank you so much. Dr. Stephen Kwanchi is the Executive Director of the National Population Council. Behind the news, and we have some of your tests coming in, I sympathize with the flood victims. It is quite unfortunate that every year governments spend millions of Ghana cedis to support flood victims from Mali, Gwipe. And thanks to the President for his gesture, I pray that there will not be any life lost again. Ibrahim from Mataheku, Accra, here sent that one. I'll be happy if the government will employ some good measures to conserve the flooding waters for agriculture. Irrigations during the dry season from Nalibi Nelson, Kwame Danso. And we want to move on to our next story. The homosexual issue continues to dominate the headlines in both local and in international media. The Christian Council of Ghana has attempted to get the issue into the political arena. At a news conference, the General Secretary of the Council advocated that Ghanaians should shun the company of politicians who support homosexuality. The Coalition of Muslim Groups also supported the Christian's position. As the moral conscience of society, it was expected that the call by the Christian and Muslim councils would be accepted by all citizens. But some citizens think otherwise. What is it that will make some citizens think persons who indulge in homosexuality should have their rights protected? We pick the thoughts of Dr. Lloyd Amwa of the Ashesi University, who's joined us on the line as to why homosexuals should have their rights protected. Good evening and you are welcome, sir, to the program.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Well, it appears the general notion is that homosexuals do not have a place in this country, and some differ in opinion. Why do you think there is a different opinion on this case?
Well, I think that we are treading very dangerous ground. First and foremost, Ghana is a constitutional republic, which means that the fundamental law of the land is the constitution. Now, if you go to Chapter 5 of the Constitution of this Republic, it makes it clear that our country, our republic, guarantees the rights of people to think freely for themselves, to express their opinions freely, and to do that which they consider in their mind, you know, useful. So long as in engaging in those processes and those actions, they do not infringe on the rights of others. So here we are in the Constitutional Republic, which clearly guarantees the rights of all of us. Now, under that kind of framework, it is very, 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 very difficult to understand why you have the Christian Council of Ghana and our Muslim imams making a very wild claim about homosexuality, in fact, showing a lot of intolerance for people who definitely have made a choice otherwise than they would expect them to follow on account of their religion and the rest of them. So this is where the problem is. To the extent that we have adopted Western liberal democracy, this is just the beginning of far, far more difficult problems that our religious bodies and the rest of them will have to deal with under this rubric. Because there's clearly that space for bringing to the table counter approaches to culture, counter approaches to dominant thinking, counter approaches to the ways in which we expected things to be done over the years. You understand? And that is where the problem is. And I think our religious leaders are behind the curve when it comes to the evolution of thinking in the world. And it is showing their interpret language, their refusal to understand that it is not everyone who will share their position. And on that basis, the Constitution clearly provides a coverage for such people. Let us turn the argument the other way around. If people turn around and say they go hold a press conference because they are atheists and say, look, people who worship God, as Christians, or people who believe in Muhammad, the Prophet, and Allah, are people who should be condemned, and any politician who is seen to be hobnobbing with them should not be elected for, what would they think? It's a simple thing. I don't see the problem.
Yeah. At all. Dr. Lloyd Amoa, you are raising the argument from the perspective of those who won't come out openly to also challenge established positions. But now we even have some traditional areas also joining the argument. The Kokofu traditional area is the latest to even come on board to say that looking at the way we live traditionally is against the social concept. In that case, too, how do we respond?
But if we take the same traditional system, in our traditions, in our cantos, in Akan culture, you can, and in fact, in other cultures as well, but let me use the Akan, which I have studied, you can marry, you know, more than one woman, right? But we have accepted also, side by side with that view, that when you become a Christian, to the extent that you are subject to the tenets of the Christian faith, you are supposed to marry one. And we have not found any contradiction with that. You understand? So, we have to understand the historical realities that we are dealing with. Yes, we have a cultural system, but here we are, historically, the Europeans have come. And when they came, they have introduced values and ideas that we have taken and implanted upon the culture. Right? So if there are tensions between those values and what traditionally we consider to be the way to go, let us address those tensions. You understand? But whilst we address those tensions, we should also be mindful of the fact that
In many, many other areas, we have allowed our traditional outlook to exist side by side with this, if you like, modern way, the modern construct, you know, which includes science and technology, which includes, you know, the use of things like synthetic rubber, the use of Western medicine, and the rest of them. You know, so the traditional cultural argument has merit in one breath. In another breath, it comes against, you know, the reality of a modern construct.
Yeah.
And how we deal with the two is something we must be sober about, and not this high-powered emotive outburst that our imams and our Christian leaders are showing. It's totally out of
Dr. Lloyd Amwa, from what you are saying, does that mean there should be engagement so that perhaps people who might be showing, I'm using this word advisedly, aberration, maybe assisted to come into the normal realm again?
Exactly. So, you see, they miss the argument. Now, I am an academic, but I'm a Christian. If I go to a church and my pastor says, look, according to Christianity, blah, 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 it is not accepted that you become homosexual, etc., he has a point, because we are in the church. And so on the basis of Christian thought, on the basis of Islamic thought, there's a valid position to be made. Outside of that realm, in the public space, within the realm of the republic, you have a lot of other views that have a right to be at the table of discourse. And so it is how you then frame your argument, right? That is how you can get that kind of engagement that you talk about. And that is how they should have approached the problem. That as Christians, we think that according to the dictates of our religion, homosexuality might be problematic, and so we are urging, you know, the general public, the general citizenry, to see our viewpoints, and then blah, 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 blah. That would have been a better way. And so they have lost that engagement moral high ground. And if they don't retool their arguments, it will be difficult to see how they'll be taken seriously. In any case, look at our television. There is sex. There is nudity. Look at our newspapers, pornography, and the rest of them. You know, so you have a whole social malaise, a whole social problem in different ways that we are dealing with. And to just have a news conference and to shout on the rooftop is not the way to deal with the problem at all.
Well, Dr. Lloyd Amwa, we wanted to also have lawyer Sampi Yale, who promised to speak on the issue from the legal perspective, but at the moment we are not able to establish contact. But some ask the question bluntly. You may not believe in it, but for the sake of the people having their rights, you believe they should practice it. Assuming perhaps a son comes home or a daughter comes home and tells you, this is the way of life I want to pursue, how do you think you can engage the person in a way that will satisfy both of you?
Well, first and foremost, what should not be missed is the way in which you raise your child. That is very critical. Now, short of that, if regardless of the admonitions, the reasoning, the ideas that you give your child, he or she grows up and decides to take up such a posture, the answer is not to go lift a cudgel, smack him on the head, lock your door, and say bye-bye. You understand? What has to be done, I mean, in my view, is that you have to let the child understand that, well, you have made a choice. The choice has implications. Those implications you have to live with. Have you thought through what you are doing? And, you know, so you engage. And in any case, it is your, as is always said, your example as a father, your example as a mother, your example as parents, your examples as a family, your examples as an extended family really, really matter. They come into the picture, you know. And so these are the kinds of things that the child will draw upon. Ultimately, if he or she persists, well, you have to live with it. You know, that's the reality of existence. I mean, there are people who decide that I want my child to be a lawyer because I'm a lawyer. I want my child to be a teacher because I'm a teacher. It doesn't happen. Do they go and hang themselves? You understand? Or people who are priests want their children to be priests, they turn out to be something else.
Yeah.
For me, it's the same kind of scenario. You understand?
Dr. Abma, sometimes we raise the question because some of the issues have come from the religious realm. We've had a traditional also joining. Do you think the moral voice has not been strong enough to keep some of these things? That is why we are having an upsurge, or it's just a global environment?
Yes, of course. Look at our country. I mean, we pay taxes. Look at our roads. Look at our hospitals. Look at the kind of life we are living. Very difficult. We are impoverished. We are pauperized, and yet we pay taxes. You know, so there's a certain moral degeneration that is engulfing us, and it seems as if there are no voices of reason, voices of light. You know, and I said, look at the media. Look at television. At 10 a.m. in the morning, you have sex, you know, and you have all kinds of images on the screen. Nobody seems to care. And those are the avenues where all these kinds of ideas pour into our country. And when they do, we sit back, allow these values to accumulate. And when they come to a head, then we say, well, you know, how come we cry like babies? You know, so that is where the problem is. Politicians are not doing what they are supposed to do. Generally, you know, if you go to the church, you have pastors who abuse women, who rape them. In the church itself, you have top pastors in Ghana who commit adultery and don't give a toss and they are in the public and we adore them. You know, pastors who are concerned about the cars that they drive and their clothing, and they preach, a gospel of success and the rest of them. So these are the problems.
But Dr. Amar, the quick point that will be added is that all these things are still frowned on. They are not just accepted as normal.
No, but where are you sure? I mean, if you look critically at the way in which Ghana has evolved, you begin to realize that even though it is frowned upon, you don't have those strong voices. And in addition to those strong voices, the kind of institutional measures that you need to deal with these things. You know, and so you can frown on it. Well, in your home, in your sitting room, of what value is that? They have to be backed at the policy level with processes and actions that show all of us that we don't accept these things.
Okay.
Right? People steal in politics and war free and the rest of them. So these are the problems that we face, of which I think homosexuality and the fact that it has become a topical, you know, public policy issue, or at least an issue in the public domain, it's a reflection of these issues that we are facing.
The debate should continue. Dr. Lloyd Amo, I want to thank you very much for raising a few concerns here as we try to still look deeply into the issues. Thank you so much. That's a lecturer at Ashesi University. Some of your thoughts before we go. Please ask the lecturer for me, what about if his child comes home and says, I want to end my life? Would he sit his child down and ask him or her to think about the consequence of it? Or will it favor him or her? Or would he straight away condemn his child's decision? Nanama Kanda Crescent. That's one. NDC government is really a listening government. Sub-Chief Yende is saying, thanks to Prof. Mills for having the people at heart. Astronomical increase in population is due to teenage pregnancies here. Since that one, homosexuality should be seriously looked at. It is an abomination in our dear nation. May the good Lord protect our dear nation. Homosexuality is a virus that threatens to ravage the souls of Ghanaians by damaging our moral values. God save us from blind imitation. Chris Mwen. The insensitive nature of the shameless homosexuals must be condemned by all. Farouk is sending that one. It is a shame for people who should know better to support this act in the name of human rights. Does that mean those in prison don't have rights? Nanaya Akatekrati. And also Alex, there is nothing like human rights in homosexuality. Mutaru Al-Hassan. For advocates of homosexuality should think of God on Judgment Day and not only the Constitution of Ghana. So homosexuality should not be tolerated in the country. And that is what we can take for now. I want to thank you all for being part of it on behalf of my production team of Christopher Sidu, Bright Agama, Edmond Tete, and Jennifer Adolabi, who did the summary together with our production assistant, Najagble Ago, and our sound man. My name is Kingsley of Interest.